For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. Let me root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Let's Get Two, the baseball podcast from the fans' perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
And welcome to Let's Get To. I'm your host, James Christopher, and we are here today continuing to celebrate our 100th episode. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to have a little drink. So I am wearing the shirt for the Louisville Bats alternative identity, the Derby City Mint Juleps. Love the shirt. Love the look. Real men wear pink, by the way. But I thought, you know what? Let's have a little celebration. Let's celebrate with some fans of baseball. It's been a real ride doing this show, you know, and I've said before that when I was growing up, my baseball experience really began and ended in the Astrodome. I had obviously seen Bull Durham and knew that minor leagues were a thing. I was aware that Houston, for example, for the longest time had New Orleans and then the Tucson Toros as their minor league affiliates. And I knew that there were players there that would be good. I knew the story of Craig Biggio and Nolan Ryan wanting him called up because he needed somebody young that could handle his breaking ball when Alan Ashby got injured. But that was really my knowledge of minor league baseball, where it began and ended for me. It really wasn't until I met my wife, Jessica, who grew up going to missions games, and then I really started to understand what minor league baseball was. And even though I was stationed in Oklahoma City and did go to some Red Hawks games when I was stationed there before they were the Dodgers, it was that experience with Jessica of going to the missions games that really taught me what it was. And then when I was on the film festival circuit, you can only be at a film festival for so long and hear some of the same stories, some of the same pretension that comes with that, that I started to escape. And I would go find a ballpark. And famously, Scott McIntyre, who was a big part of this show, and I went to see the Tulsa Drillers. And I think that's where the show was born. And so I'm sitting around here and I'm looking at all of these caps, and these are caps that represent affiliated minor league teams. They represent some collegiate summer league teams, some indie ball. And I was going to do this thing where I ranked my favorite caps again, or looked at some of my favorite logos. And then I thought, why do something that's unneedlessly or unnecessarily competitive? I have so many hats and so many brands that I've grown to really love. And some of them have been teams I've gone to and experienced, like the Durham Bulls or the Tacoma Rainiers. Hats that I've experienced but were gifts of family members because they knew how much I loved it, like my Midland Rockhounds look. You know, going out and seeing the branding for the Missoula Paddleheads before they got kicked off, and it was excited to celebrate them. You know, the Missions hat from when I first started going, that was, by the way, their Superior logo, if you're listening, Missions. You know, the Macon Bacon, who will be back on after they having just won their first championship. Baseball is beautiful. The brands that represent the game are beautiful. And I thought there was no point in having unnecessary infighting about it all. The thing is, tearing each other down at lower levels, it's never a good thing. And I've had, and it happens, it's natural. I've become really friendly with front office people, general managers, you name it, at all manner and levels of sub MLB baseball. And there is some infighting in there too. And there's some sort of brand jealousy that happens, and it's just all for naught. The beautiful thing about this level of baseball is you can celebrate the game. I probably have, not probably, I do. I have a much more relaxing time when I'm visiting. Let's see who we have here. If I were to go to a Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp game, or finally get out to the Peoria Chiefs, or finally get out to, you can't see the Omaha Storm Chasers down here, or when I went to the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks game with Andrew Nelson. That is relaxing, sitting in the sun, talking baseball, watching the competition. It's where the game is pure and it's beautiful and it's not clouded by my own competitiveness. When I go to an Astros game, I'm always going to enjoy being at a ballpark more than anywhere else, but that enjoyment is exponentially improved based on a win or a loss. I would imagine that's the same for other Astros fans, Yankee fans. I would imagine that's the runs the gamut from MLB teams. But I don't imagine that anybody that rolls up to, you know, a Lancaster Jethawks game, you're there for the experience, you're there for the baseball, win or lose doesn't really probably affect your mood too much. So that's why I kind of just took this from having some sort of forced competition to really just wanting to celebrate all of the brands and kind of have this moment of being around some of the things that I just dearly love so much. So we have a great show for you today. We're going to be talking to Benjamin Hill, who was our Person of the Year last year and who is now going to have that award named after him this year. And we're going to reveal the winner. So stay with us. We got a great episode.
On deck, the Let's Get To interview, brought to you by Fine Line Sportswear.
We are excited to welcome Let's Get To on our 100th anniversary celebration week. One of friends of the show, been on a bunch. He was our Person of the Year last year and the namesake for that award, Mr. Ben Hill. Ben, how's it going?
Hey, it's going all right. And yeah, Person of the Year. I still can't really get over that. You know, I'm inherently self-deprecating. So every time I hear that, I feel honored. But then I also feel like, nah, that's got to be somebody else. It's got
to
be.
I'd like to see the other guys that were. First of all, how are you doing surviving the pandemic? Like, have you had any kind of normalcy since we last spoke, which was really when it first started?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've had normalcy in the abnormalcy, if that makes sense. You know, very much in routine. And so a lot of things that didn't seem normal a couple months ago seem normal now in terms of not leaving the house very often. Of course, working from home, not being very social, you know, all the things that we're dealing with. So in that sense, it's gotten to be pretty normal. And you know, I'm, of course, like anyone with a job in these tough times, I'm happy to have a job and I'm happy to still cover and kind of be a, not necessarily a spokesman, but an ambassador for and a celebrant of the world that I cover of minor league baseball, and to highlight that, you know, there might not be any games, but these teams are still here. These people are still here. And this is still a world that means a lot to a lot of people.
One of the things that's been interesting is I feel like your level of writing hasn't really dropped off. You're still finding new angles. How has that been trying to find what to talk about? I mean, are you having to dig deep, or is it just you're able to get to stuff that maybe you wouldn't have had time to get to before?
A little of both. I mean, certainly sometimes you have to dig deep. Sometimes, you know, that sense of frustration or discomfort creeps in the way it does, I think, for a lot of us in different ways, where it's just like, you know, there's no season. We're in the midst of a pandemic. What am I supposed to write about? What is, you know, sometimes I get hit with that. But on the whole, no, not really. You know, you have your ups and downs. But work-wise, I've had more ups than downs as regards just the sort of energy and spirit that I've still been able to bring to it. And a lot of that is, you know, feeding off the energy and spirit I still see from, you know, people who care about minor league baseball, the fans, people who work in it, that sort of thing. So what I'm really doing right now is, you know, generally writing, you know, two standalone features a week. And one, you know, might be more archival or historical. I did a long series on like fun facts of every team and every league. So, you know, there's been more time for that sort of thing, which certainly normally wouldn't be, you know, quote unquote in season content, but I'm trying to keep at least one feature a week. And of course, a lot of my Twitter commentary, you know, about things that teams are doing and, you know, current events and ways people are getting to use ballparks, even in the midst of a pandemic and even with no season and that sort of thing. So it's kind of a mix right now of more traditional off-season historical stuff and also just saying like, hey, in a sense, this still is the 2020 season. It's just not baseball on the field, but there's still, you know, food and movies and fireworks and all sorts of promotions and just doing what you can.
What has, I think, what has shocked you the most, or what is the most sort of creative use of a ballpark that you've seen come across?
There's been a lot. You know, some of the more creative ones are just the way you think about minor league baseball is that, you know, good ideas get copied. So you think of the teams that did things first. So I think of, you know, Omaha having the first parking lot fireworks show, Daytona having the first movie night. And then shortly after that, Colorado Springs, the Rocky Mountain Vibes, having the first drive-in movie night where you literally drove your car onto the field. So I think of some of those early benchmarks as being remarkable. You know, I think the team that's probably been the most creative overall and the one that's had, you know, the most success in drawing attention to themselves in a season with no baseball is almost certainly Pensacola Blue Wahoos, who have, of course, done the ballpark Airbnb, which got a lot of attention. So literally are letting fans rent. I think it's $1,500 a night last I checked, which is a lot of money. But I think you can also do up to 15 people or perhaps even more than that. So if you split it a bunch of ways, it could be an affordable night out at the ballpark. And in addition to that, you know, Bubba Watson, the golfer, is one of their co-owners. He designed a disc golf course, so they had that going. And a lot of it does speak to each state's approach to the pandemic, for better or for worse, is that, you know, some teams can do things that other teams can't on a state-by-state and sometimes, you know, on a municipality-by-municipality basis. There's a lot of variance in what can or can't be done. And of course, safety always needs to be a priority. So there's a lot of just kind of making it up as you go along, trying to bring in some revenue, trying to stay somewhat relevant. And often your hands are tied, you know, more so than you'd like just by the reality of the situation.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, obviously down here, we saw Round Rock and San Antonio and a bunch of others play a different brand of baseball for a season just to get some people in their park.
Yeah, absolutely. And I somewhat along those lines, one of my most recent feature stories was about Lansing, the Lugnuts, doing something along those lines. They created an in-house two-team league called the Lemonade League, you know, kind of making lemonade out of the lemons that 2020 gave them, that 2020 has given everybody.
Yeah,
that sort of creativity where a sellout crowd is 100, but they still, I mean, to go through that effort of putting two teams together, you know, local collegiate players, you know, creating the league's branding, still having food, still having promotions. You know, that's a lot of work for when you can only have 100 fans in the ballpark a night at $12 per. You know, the revenue is somewhat limited. But I think that also speaks to a minor league baseball spirit is a lot of things that teams are doing aren't going to bring in enough money to really make a huge difference. But I think it's also like psychologically important. Yes, it's good to get any revenue coming in you can, but just to be doing something, just to be cultivating a small amount of the energy that you would just be feeding off of throughout the entirety of the season, just to open your ballparks, interact in any way. I think, you know, sometimes it's not about necessarily bringing a ton of money, but it's just about saying we're still here and we're still going to use our collective creativity to do something, you know?
Yeah, we talked with Chris Almendares, who actually will be winning the award named after you this year.
What an honor. Congratulations, Chris. Yeah,
we you know, breaking news. But, you know, he talked about why they decided to do it, knowing that, and they went, Round Rock went even less than what the state of Texas would allow. Like, they realized that maybe Texas was being Texas a little bit. So I think they only went to 20% ballpark capacity. He was just trying not to lay anybody off. He said that straight up, I'm trying to keep as many people employed as possible.
Yeah. And that's been a big part of it. And, you know, you don't want to sugarcoat it. A lot of people have been laid off or furloughed. A lot of the teams that have kept a full staff have been more the result of, you know, a generous or just a well-endowed ownership group, as opposed to, you know, really having the financials straightened out, you know, to where it really, strictly economically, I think it's really tough to justify it. But from a personal level, from a human level, I know teams are doing everything they can and willing to take the hit as much as they can. It's obviously like so many other things, but a team by team basis. But that has been a struggle. And, you know, from me writing about it, sometimes when you're getting in touch with teams, you're like, I don't know exactly who to get in touch with. I don't know who is currently working, and it's tough. And I don't want to make light of that side. At the same time, I do want to be celebrating what teams are doing in these minimized situations.
And what I guess I really hope from all of this is that the fans realize when we can go back, what these teams tried to do to keep a little bit of normalcy in those communities.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the cliche, absence makes the heart grow fonder. But I would like to think that there will be a renewed interest and just a deeper appreciation, you know, to once you go without this, that's something you took for granted, that we really all took for granted in a sense, just having this in our lives. I do think it will result in an increased respect and love for what an asset it is in the community, and hopefully increased support. And hopefully there'll be as many teams as possible going forward. And there's still a lot to shake out in the minor league landscape with the negotiations with the Major League Baseball, in addition just to the the economic uncertainty that is still ongoing because of COVID. So, you know, you could spin off into hours long conversations about all that. Most of it would be speculation at this point, but there's a lot of uncertainty. But, you know, what I said right when the season was canceled, and I still stand by it, I don't want to be corny about it, but I think there's just such a love for minor league baseball in this country among the fans who show up and among the people who work there that, you know, its survival is guaranteed in that sense, even if it changes quite a bit. And even if we see it in new forms going forward, I just think there's still a market for what minor league baseball is and represents. And I think at a certain level, it'll be exciting to see it evolve through the years, you know, to deal with hard times and then hopefully come out big picture, long picture, big picture, very big picture, you know, better and stronger than ever before. That's what I'm hoping.
Well, I think that's actually a great place to leave it, Ben. Thanks so much for everything that you've done for the sport, for our show. You know, when we had you on for the first time, everybody was like, oh, you got Ben. So really just appreciate everything you've done for us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. It's, as I said, it's an honor that, to come on the show and, to have an award named after me. It's certainly a first, but I appreciate you and everyone who listens and, you know, our collective enthusiasm for minor league baseball, and let's keep it up and support your local minor league baseball team.
Ladies and gentlemen, please adjust your scorecards. We have a special guest in the lineup, brought to you by Marco Fine Arts.
So we are excited to welcome one of our favorite people in baseball, Megan Ellis. She is one of the brains behind Home Sweet Ballpark and behind Ballpark Vibes. How you doing, Megan?
Doing good.
Do you trust me?
Yes.
I need you to close your eyes.
Oh, gosh.
You may open them. First of all, let's talk about your Padres. You seem super excited with how it's going so far.
Wait a second. Hold on.
Okay.
If we're going to do this.
Let's do it.
We got to go together on this.
Let's do it. Yeah, let's do it. So how are you excited with how it's going?
Oh, so Kevin AC just announced that Cal Quantrill will be getting the start for tomorrow. So I'm stoked. Someone just tweeted, Megan, are you hyperventilating? And yes.
You are. We have video evidence of it. How has the season been for you? Because you obviously are very into your Padres, but you can't be there. How's that been watching them, hearing the bat sounds weird with nobody there? It's just odd.
Yeah. So I've developed a pregame ritual, that my dad and I have been doing, which is cool because normally it's one season ticket for myself. So it's cool having my dad in on this every day now and like hanging out with him and building our own kind of like traditions. So we always go and get my Starbucks before every game, go get the food for my mama, whatever we're in for dinner. And we get home before that start time and we're watching the game. We kick my mom out of the living room saying, sorry, you're not getting your element tonight. And it's just strictly Padres.
I love everything about it. They're one of the most exciting teams in baseball. So, I mean, how fun has it been to watch these? They're kind of putting it together.
Oh, yeah. It's been a lot of fun, especially seeing Tatis and then Jay Cronenworth. Like, that was a very nice surprise that we've been having. Kid has just been making some plays. There's been some jokes on Twitter. Wow, we got fam in the Cronenworth trade? What a great deal. So, everyone's been changing it to the Cronenworth trade instead of the FAM trade, which is pretty funny. But it's been exciting to watch. I mean, the last couple nights weren't so great, but even then, though, they've been producing. They had two home runs yesterday. Like, this is not a team that we've seen before.
I thought it was interesting. I saw an interesting tweet about, because y'all had the Dodgers on the ropes. You've beaten them a couple times to the point that the Dodgers like resorted to a bunch of bunts just to get a run scored. And I thought that was a very, like, that's a sign of like in 2020, nobody bunts anymore. I thought that was great.
Weird baseball.
Baseball.
This whole season's just weird baseball.
So I want to talk a little bit about your two sites. So let's talk about, first of all, how is Home Sweet Ballpark going? I wanted to point out that I'm wearing a Salem Red Sox shirt for our friend and former.
Go Mel, all of
them. I know. How cool is that? Now she can't return my call. Just kidding. But how's everything going with Home Sweet Ballpark?
Things are going well. So I have transitioned to doing a monthly charity now. So I'm picking a new charity every month to support with a different product. So this month we are doing Big John's Youth Foundation. This one's very special to me because Big John was my friend from high school who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. So his mom and sister had created a youth foundation in his honor to kind of just help support youth in the community with their sports, academics, even youth who have cancer, and just finding different ways to provide resources and mentorship for them. So since I've been super close to that family growing up, this was just the charity I thought was the best fit for this month. Plus, I have a new design that I was so excited to release. And I was like, this design's so good. It just needs something good to go with it. So I always say the baseball gods are real. That's my thing. I love the baseball gods. Like, I am a huge believer in baseball gods. So I made a really cool design, which it just came in the mail today. So you're going to get a sneak peek.
Actually, breaking news.
It's listed on the site and like I've announced it and like the mock-ups, but like the real thing is right here. Like, baseball gods.
Oh, I will be ordering. I will be ordering as soon as this episode is over.
It's so good. So I've always felt like John has been my baseball god, just because he's the one that taught me how to do scorebook for the most part and has just taught me a lot more about my knowledge for the game. Was always very supportive in every little side hustle I had, whether it be making friendship bracelets, learning more about baseball, just every little like thing I had. He was always there to support me and make sure that like I was on the right track. So I feel like since he's passed, he's like become my baseball god and helping me get all these opportunities in the baseball world. So I figured that design is the perfect design to partner for the charity for this month. So half of the proceeds from any product with that design on it is going to the charity.
Well, I'd like to send my condolences to Peoria Chiefs. I will not be ordering your jersey today. And in fact, we'll be ordering t-shirts from you. Sorry, Peoria. And then, how is a little bit, how's ballpark vibes going?
It's going well. We've taken a little bit of a break for a bit. Just a lot of us have been, since life has been kind of back to normal with a lot of us going back to work and stuff, we haven't been producing as much content as we'd like to be doing. So we're kind of just posting whenever we have something up. I wish we were posting daily like we were before.
Yeah.
But Pam and I are working really hard to try to do as much as we can, especially since Pam is overdoing all her Chicago Dog stuff since Indy League has been playing. I started work again. So the photo studio I work at has been opening up and I'm going to be going back to school. So we're trying to get contact up when we can, but I mean, we're still really proud of everything that we've come up with without baseball being played. Like, that's the big accomplishment there is the fact that we started from nothing with no baseball and we're able to turn into something.
Absolutely. So. And you know, my audience is keeping score and we're talking about two separate businesses. One of the things that we do at Let's Get To is we like to, you know, award and notify people that we think are doing the best to elevate the game. And you are Entrepreneur of the Year this year, Megan. That is why we have you on the show. So congratulations.
Thanks.
You're very welcome. It's something we've done, you know, for every year of the show that's existed. And we really are excited to kind of recognize you for everything that you're doing to really elevate the best parts of the game.
I'm going to cry.
Don't do that. Then I'll cry. And then he'll cry. And then it's like, what are we doing? So, yeah. No, it's just, we really are. It's an honor to know you. I'm really, really just excited.
Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to try not to cry.
Try not to cry. Well, actually, that actually ends the interview. But thank you so much again for being on Let's Get To and being a part of my baseball journey.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy. Like, you were my very first podcast that, like, reached out and featured me and my brand. You've been there since the beginning. So I really do appreciate you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please adjust your scorecards. We have a special guest in the lineup. Brought to you by Marco Fine Arts.
So we are excited to continue talking about the Padres with our favorite look into the Padres and their whole system from Friars on the Farm. Friars on the Farm. Donovan, could y'all have picked a less tongue-twistery name than that?
Right. Exactly. Friars on the Farm. Donovan Jones from Friars on the Farm. You know, we can just step aside right now for the stepping over of the unwritten rules in baseball and just talk about the team in general. Obviously, San Diego has Fernando Tatis, and we have Fernando Tatis mania happening not only in San Diego, but it's starting to get the national attention. But the team itself, you know, we won last night, but we just got off a five-game skid where we took the first two from the Dodgers and then lost a couple heartbreakers where one Mookie Betts hits three home runs in a game. Talking about unwritten rules, but, you know, and then we got swept by a couple heartbreakers in Arizona. So the team itself is totally different from last year. And AJ Preller has, for a long time in Padres Twitter and the Padres kind of fandom, has really questioned if he can put together a major league roster. And in the offseason, the bullpen, he put together a stellar bullpen on paper. And so far, it has not really earned its keep or earned its name as the best bullpen on paper. But I think that's going to figure itself out. And the lineup has vastly improved, but there are still a couple holes in it. We just had Tommy Pham go down just yesterday with a hamate bone. Had actually surgery yesterday on a hamate bone.
Yeah.
But a guy I want to talk about in that trade is Jake Cronenworth. The trades Brothers made with trading Hunter Renfroe and Xavier Edwards for Pham and Jake Cronenworth, which is usually, you know, that second guy's usually a throw in. He stays in AAA, maybe gets a cup of coffee. This kid has absolutely just shot straight to the top of the lineup. He's on the top of the lineup, but he's certainly worked his way into the lineup. The Hosmer went down with gastritis for a week. They threw him at first base. And automatically, within a game, he had made three or four plays that you're like, oh, my God, who is this kid? Oh, holy cow. You know, incredible.
The Padres have a very 2015 Astros vibe to them right now, where you can see down the road the run that's coming. And maybe they're still putting it together. You know, I know all about heartbreak in Arizona this year. It'll happen. Does a five-game skid affect you more knowing there's only 60 games in a very weird season? Like, how do you feel emotionally about it?
Well, you know, the Padres fans are just calling for everyone's head. And, you know, it's very, you know, the Padres, this is my hometown team. I'm born and raised with this team, as you are with the Astros. They're very Padres when they shouldn't be. And, you know, we start off strong, but then going on the five-game skid, having, you know, just losing the Padres' way with a bad bullpen or an error there, you know, a mishit there or whatever. I think we're going to pull through it. You know, the bullpen will figure itself out. I don't think we're going to go on a big run and necessarily catch the Dodgers. I mean, it's the Dodgers, and it's tough to catch those guys. But I think we're going to be right around 500, maybe a couple games over 500, and make it in the playoffs. And as you know, anyone that gets in the playoffs, it's game on. A quick three-game series against any team could go either way. And so we're definitely aiming for the playoffs. The team, we'll see what happens during the, you know, the trade deadline. It's kind of weird. We don't know if Preller doesn't really want to toss it, get rid of any of his top prospects. We still have yet to see Mackenzie Gore come up. Today, Adrian Morejon is pitching in the fifth spot. We kind of got to shore up that fifth spot of the rotation. Sure. Another acquisition from Preller has been Zach Davies. the kid tops out at 89 and just has been stellar, where, you know, major league hitters can time a bullet. They cannot seem to hit his changeup, which, you know, drops out of the zone at around 80 miles an hour. Yeah. So shoring up the fifth spot in the rotation and maybe tightening up the lineup a little bit, I think we're really poised to go far.
Yeah, I'm looking. I just did the math when you were talking, and it looks like y'all are two games out of that automatic second wild card spot with our second place division in the division with the Colorado Rockies starting to fade a little bit. Is that the goal then? The goal is to get everything shored up and feel like you're strong going into the playoffs with that second spot.
Yeah, I think you know, either some of these younger players are going to have to step up, like Edward Olivares. They brought Ty France back up. He'll be in the DH spot, kind of in the Tammy Pham role. Josh Naylor just came up, another prospect that was highly touted with the hit tool. I had lost a lot of weight in the offseason, and it is fast, but you know, those bats have got to come around. We've got to produce runs. We got to get Manny Machado going. Manny has not been hitting the way Manny we know can. And should. When that happens, you can just, you know, with the rest of the lineup, with Cronenworth, with Grisham, got his name, the first name, you know, he, coming out of center field, high on base guy, left-handed bat with a funky grip. We should be good getting in the playoffs. You know, it's just like this short, crazy season in the 2020 season, get to the playoffs and anything can happen.
It's going to be very interesting too, because, you know, you talk about Manny Machado's not hitting, Altuve's famously not hitting. Everybody's got somebody not hitting. And I think it has everything to do with the run up. We really could see an offensive explosion in the last third of the season.
Every game be a slugfest. You know, and I think that's kind of the same way with the bullpen. Like, pitchers need a lot more time to be, to get ready. And with all these new guys in our bullpen, they got to kind of figure out the roles. And Jace Tingler, I think, has done a pretty decent job finding where those guys are going to go. It looks like Pagan's going to kind of settle in, although he did give up the 3-run shot game winner the other day. I think he's going to probably settle into the eighth, even perhaps occasionally ninth inning role for the closer role. But Drew Pomeranz, everyone bemoaned Drew Pomeranz getting signed to this 3-year deal. And he has been lights out and unstoppable in the bullpen when everyone else kind of been trying to figure it out.
So let's shift gears a bit then, because you guys, your show is mostly focused on the farm system of the Friars. Yeah. Looking at how devastating is not having a season going to be to minor league baseball, do you think?
Well, it's going to be incredibly devastating, because you have the, you know, the negotiations with minor league baseball and major league baseball, where our team, the Tri-City Dust Devils, may not ever see another game again. Several other teams that, you know, may have played their last game. And it is funny how, you know, what we're reading from Baseball America and JJ Cooper is how the negotiations are going, how much Major League Baseball wants to take over not only minor league baseball, but maybe even expanding into take over, you know, these dream leagues, which will go into like the travel ball kind of series and get these elite kind of travel ball in your under the MLB umbrella. And so we'll see how that figures out, but it's sad to watch these communities. Chattanooga, I was in Chattanooga in end of September. They've had professional baseball there since 1886.
Yeah.
If not later. And they can see their last of the, you know, last of professional baseball.
It's so sad. Well, Donovan, thanks again. Tell everybody where, first of all, show off that fancy polo.
Yes. Well, so we got our Friars on the Farm. You can see us on Twitter. We're on all podcast formats, Google Play, iHeartRadio, obviously Apple iTunes. Anywhere you get a podcast, you can find us, or just Google Friars on the Farm.
All right. And how do I get one of those shirts?
Well, I had this one made, but you can go to and the company went under, you know, during the COVID, they went under. So I got to find a new shirt company. But what we are doing is we are selling shirts, and I can tweet out the I can tweet it out later on.
Yeah,
we are shirts with players like Mackenzie Gore, Luis Patino, Ryan Weathers, and Joey Cantillo. We're selling those for the Lake Elsinore Booster Club. So the little thing that we can do is a small podcast for our minor league system, are selling these cool player-approved design shirts, and every single penny that comes in go straight to the Lake Elsinore Booster Club, because here in California, it's incredibly expensive to live. And the Lake Elsinore Booster Club helps support the players.
Definitely get that link out. Donovan, first of all, thanks so much for being a part of our Let's Get To journey. It has been so much fun getting to know you and interact with you. Jessica was going to pop in and say hi, but she's on a work call all of a sudden. But no, it's been great, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Who's on first? The Let's Get To Local 9, brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
We are excited to be welcoming to Let's Get To again one of our good friends for the show, Mr. Matt Durkin from the Normal Corn Belters. Matt, the Pod League is wrapped up. Have you gotten any sleep?
A little bit. I actually had to go to Minnesota for a tournament right after the season ended. So I got back late last night, but it was good to sleep in today. So that was nice.
That was nice. What was the tournament in Minnesota?
It was just the typical travel tournament.
Okay, great. Well, how did it go? Now that you have a second to kind of look back on it, it obviously seemed to have been a really successful experiment for you guys. How do you feel like it went?
It went good. So our tickets were almost up, or doubled from the previous year. So that's always nice. Players love the format. They love not having to travel. Cause I know those 12-hour bus rides, after you play a game can be no fun at all. So they loved it. They're all looking forward to doing it again next year if we continue with that format. And our corporate partners are happy too, because not only did we see a rise in attendance, so they get more impressions inside the ballpark, but a lot of companies are struggling with marketing outside of online formats right now. So it's nice to see they're able to market to people just in a more family-friendly environment that they haven't had the chance to since March, really.
So when we go into the 2021 season, we obviously, I'm sure you're like me, around March, you thought this would be a 2 or 3 week problem, and it turned into a forever problem, which means We can't really look at when you guys would start again in May or June. You at least know y'all have this in your back pocket if we are still dealing with similar situations.
Yeah, there's a chance we do this just again at our own time. However, at this point, the Corn Belters are committed to being in the Prospect League. We haven't left the league or anything like that. It was just a temporary break with all the COVID stuff. However, we are looking at possibly doing the KCL this summer, again next year too.
Yeah, it's such an interesting format, and it's one like it was sort of fun because we actually did go out to the Car Shield League. So to see some of those same teams playing out there, it was really awesome. What was some stuff like as you're growing in your career that you learned from that whole experience, other than the fact that you don't need sleep or food?
I think the biggest thing was just kind of that rush process, having everything at such an accelerated rate compared to just saying, hey, if I don't get something done this week, it's no big deal. We still have 7 months before the season starts. When you rush to get a season started in 28 days and build a brand new league, that's not an option. So it really helped us say, hey, there's some things that are going to pop up that will be issues, but you can't freak out about them as much. And just learning to kind of go with the curve and go with the flow instead of, wow, there's this huge issue. We got to stop everything what we're doing and put out this fire, because fires are going to show up regardless. So kind of just learn to deal with things at an accelerated rate and then just go with the flow and hope people like what they see.
Well, like I said, we were very impressed with what you guys pulled off. You said the fans were all pretty excited too.
Mm-hmm. It was like the perfect storybook ending in the championship game too. Like the number one seed Corn Belters were down 4-0 to start the game. They had a big 3-run homer laying the game to tie it. And then of course the MVP hits the walk-off in the bottom of the 7th, which is our 9th inning when you have doubleheaders. So it's kind of like the perfect ending to the season. And we're just glad it all played out the way it did.
And now you get to be a baseball fan. I mean, how's it been watching your Cubbies and it's still a very weird environment, right?
It was nice when they were winning this past weekend. It wasn't too fun to watch, but the bullpen's had some struggles. So it's nice to just be able to, when you get home at night, to put on the game and kind of enjoy it from a fan's point of view compared to the last whole summer or month or two, just running around and catching the game while going from one place to another. So it's kind of weird just having your feet up and the TV on.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jessica and I are going to be back out there next year in normal for wherever you guys, if y'all are doing the Colonels League or if you're back in the Prospect League. One of the things we do around here, Matt, is we do every year at the end of the season our Let's Get Two awards. And you have won our Collegiate Summer League Person of the Year. So we'll get a plaque out to you. So congratulations to you and to the Norman Cornbelters.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's more of a team effort. So we're just glad to be a part of your show and everything.
We're glad to have you. We'll have you back on at the beginning of the season next year. And like I said, we will be out. But thanks again for just being a big part of our second season and our first 100 episodes.
That's awesome. Hopefully next year we're around 200 when we're doing this at the end of the year.
I want to sleep too, Matt. I need to take some breaks too.
Ladies and gentlemen, please adjust your scorecards. We have a special guest in the lineup, brought to you by Marco Fine Arts.
So we are excited. It's our privilege. Nothing, I think, can signifies what this pandemic means and the fact that you and I have not met in person yet because we're supposed to. Ken, you were our fan of the year last year. Nobody loves minor league baseball more than you. How are you guys doing
I think there's a few people that like it as much as me. You met Eric the Peanut Guy. He's far more positive than I am. So I will switch hats. I was good with the Corpus Christi Hooks hat that I would have had on when I saw you back in April. So it's kind of stinks, you know. It sort of came up. We had about a month, I think, before the season started, before we were supposed to leave on our first trip, that it got canceled. And then it started to, you know, you sort of saw the writing on the wall that eventually the season was gonna get canceled. So I had started, I had tickets to four or five games? I think four games down there where you were at. We had tickets like every weekend through April, I think most of through May. So I had to go back and recoup all the ticket costs and all that stuff. And, most of the teams are really good about getting it back. There's still a couple that I'm waiting on. There was one that they had to go to the corporate and they had to write a check and all nine yards. But I did a lot of what I did was, I know they've already had my money. So I did the exchanges. I exchanged merchandise instead of give me the ticket money back. Keep the money, send me merchandise. So I did, there's a couple teams I did the switch with that. So I wound up with, you know, probably two dozen hats that I that I might not have had otherwise.
Yeah.
And loading up on minor league card sets and stuff. But yeah, it kind of stinks not being able to travel and all the work you got to go, you know, chase everybody back down. Not to mention the hotel rooms. The hotels.com has been good with refunding all the money and stuff, but it's, and I know how much money that I got back. I can just imagine how much these towns are losing, not having baseball, how much, you know, the industry as a whole is losing based on this. So, and it's not just, you know, Major League Baseball, it's all those little towns and stuff there.
Major League Baseball can handle it. But you're exactly right. I did a lot of, just hold it as a voucher. I'll buy a ticket next year. And even if I don't go, I don't care. Like, it's about supporting these communities. Now you and Matt were on this quest to try to get to all these parks. I mean, like, does this completely mean you're not going to make your goal now?
It's going to be tight. I may have to work something out work-wise. Like right now, work-wise, my company I work for has been great. And I know a lot of places, you know, that completely shut down the restaurant industry and stuff, especially around here is, you know, just completely down. They don't have jobs and stuff. I've been lucky enough to work through this stuff, and our work schedule, they split our crew in half. So half of us come in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. That's the shift I'm on. And then the other half work Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but they're paying us, we're working 3 10-hour days. They're paying us for 40. So the good part is, I work for a great company. The good thing is I've got all this time, but I can't go anywhere. So this is, you know, if we were able to make trips, you know, I could leave Wednesday night. I could drive to Arkansas and see a couple games and then come back to Pittsburgh. But, you know, I got all this time, but I think that's what's driving me crazy more than anything. So, just sort of like wanting to get out of that. Like, I'm jonesing for a trip right now because I haven't gone anywhere. I counted the other day, it was like maybe six places I've been to, you know, aside from work and home. It's, you know, went to the store, been to the liquor store, been to the grocery store, and that's about it. So it's tough.
Well, let's show off a little bit of what you're wearing. You already showed us your Hooks hat, but show us who is that? And I love it.
Cedar Rapids Colonels. I don't know if you saw the stuff online. They got hit with a pretty bad storm last night. Blew their outfield wall down, knocked down their scoreboard, a bunch of their billboards and stuff they had in the outside. So saw that this morning, first thing this morning. But yeah, they've got the 2020 What the Shuck shirt. So I couldn't pass it up. It was kind of goofy. They have that mascot, Mr. Shucks, which just, it's the goofiest damn mascot. It's not even my favorite. It's just like one that I look at, I'm like, yeah, that's minor league baseball right there. It's just so goofy. It's a baseball with its tongue hanging out.
Yeah.
And if you watch any of the games, and I would advise doing this because the MILB package, you can get on there and watch any of the archive games and stuff. Go back and watch a game from Cedar Rapids because the mascot will sit behind home plate. There'll be nobody else behind home plate stuff. He'll just be sitting there and you'll see him like just wiggling his head. And stuff. I don't know how it doesn't distract the pitcher. I think that's the one that they have, like, there's like a tunnel that comes out and he kind of sits down in the tunnel and dances around and stuff. And like, it's just one of those things. It's one of those enduring things about minor league baseball. That's why you go, you know, stuff like that.
So, you know, God willing and the crick don't rise. We all figured this out. We agree as a country that we're going to fix the virus. As so many other countries around the world have already done, and you get to be back at a ballpark in April. What are you looking forward to the most?
I don't know. I've talked to some people. I started the one group on Twitter, people that travel around to baseball games. So I think that's the thing I miss the most is like just going and being able to talk to people about, you know, about the game or just learn about their town. I mean, some of the stuff we did last year, like some of the best memories I have, and it's like, you know, so we weren't going to talk too much about politics and stuff, but when we were down in Virginia and there was a couple people there, we got to the game in Pulaski real early and started to talk to some people about, you know, their community and stuff like that. And I knew sort of, you know, politically we're not probably in the same thing, but I got to hear their side of what they're seeing and stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, I understand why they think the way they do. And I think there needs to be a lot more of that in the country, but I think baseball is a good place to start because you have that in common. You can start by talking about that and you can talk about the other things, but you learn a little bit about different communities and then you might change your perspective on everything as a whole. So it's like, there's not any black or white, everything's sort of a gray. It's just a matter of how gray and, you know, there's common ground there. We're all Americans after all. And you got to do that. You don't want something bad to come to get us all back on the same page, because that's usually how you get everything on the same page is when something tragic happens. So we don't need that. What we need is to try and figure out a way to come together without the tragedy. So, but yeah, I don't miss the game so much, honestly. I think it's the people more than anything.
Ladies and gentlemen, please adjust your scorecards. We have a special guest in the lineup, brought to you by Marco Fine Arts.
We are excited to be talking a little Astros baseball with one of our best friends from across the pond. Stevie, how's it going, man?
It's good. It's, you know, the Astros are back on top now, as far as I'm concerned, because they're winning. After the awful losing streak, I think anything's better than nothing. You know what I'm saying right now. So
yeah, I just thought to myself, you know, we're recording this. I think it's dropping in 2 days, but we recorded this on Monday, and I thought, I don't want to see another extra innings game. So thank you, Kyle.
Oh, it's a curse, James. I don't want anything to do with them anymore. Every time we go for extra innings, it's like, not only is it hard, don't forget my time difference here. You know, we can be going on till 5 a.m. hearing the birds chirping. but you know, but basically, it's a curse as well. We never seem to come off well from it. And, you know, it's... looking at, obviously, the most recent game, we got that walk-off, extra innings, were nowhere to be seen.
Nowhere to be seen. How is that? So, you know, one of the things Major League Baseball did, which I know a lot of Astros fans complain about, but they really did normalize the start times. So that way, it's not too early over there. But also, when we go over there, it's not too terribly late. How has it been for you, though? All of these 8-10 starts has to suck.
It really does. I mean, I'm having to sort of, I'll be honest with you, you know, I've got two ways of doing that. I either, if I've got the real you know, I feel like I'm mentally capable of staying up for it. You know, I will. But the games are ending at like 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. Like I say, you see the sunrise, you hear the birds chirp. Other nights, I just don't have the capacity or energy. I wake up at 7 and I'll watch the game again in full on archive. So I'm a couple of hours behind some days, but, you know, then I'll log on and we'll discuss from there. But yeah, it's killing me. It's absolutely killing me because they're all 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning out here.
Yeah.
It's a real struggle.
We start school soon and my kids know when it's Astros after dark and the Astros lose, cause I come in tired and grumpy.
It's the worst combination because, you know, you can be around people the next day and they're like, what were you doing? I was staying up for a ball game. Oh, well, at least they won. And you go, no, they didn't.
Yeah. I think there was one time when, you know, cause you know, it's funny because you know, all baseball teams go through stretches where you can't hit in scoring position. Yeah, and I think they lost at like 1 a.m. in Oakland last year. And I walked up, walked out. My wife was still up. And I said, I stayed awake for this shit. And went back to bed.
Yeah, I don't know. There's nothing more demoralizing, isn't there? But, you know, when they win, fantastic. You know, sometimes I can't sleep for a good half an hour after it. You know, be scrolling or chatting about it, whatever. But when they lose, you know, you think, oh, no. And it's been a very turbulent season. We expected it, but it has been turbulent in more ways.
Let's go through that then. Let's go through some of the big points of the season. One, so we're sitting here 4.5 games behind Oakland. Look, Oakland, like you pointed out before we got started, they were a good team last year. They are the perfect team for a short season to go on a run.
Absolutely.
Do you think it's done, or do you think the Astros have a puncher's chance to catch them?
You know me, I'll miss the positive. I've known as that. You know, I'll keep fighting and I keep hoping for the best for him. I'll never write him off. I can't do it. I mean, you know, we want to see him play for as long as they can, not just because we're fans, but because they're our guys. But, you know, we keep fighting. That's all we can do. I'm always going to believe they have a shot. Listen, I'm from England. I have to support England when they play in the World Cup and the Euros. Believe me, I'm used to it. I am used to us crashing out. I'm used to us crashing and burning. So I've had years of experience.
Verlander. Do you think Verlander's coming back? Or you know, he's supposedly picking up a baseball this week.
Yeah. Apparently this week he's going to start throwing again, isn't he? But look, you know, I'll be honest with you. Look at these young guys. Look at them. Look at what we're getting from them. It's amazing. It's absolutely astounding. You know, we're packed, in my opinion. And if these are the future of the team and of the ball club, I'm all for it. If we have to take a little bit of a loss on this season, you know, we don't quite make it, so be it. But we've got a great staff. Yes, Verlander is key. But you can't rely upon anybody. Just like you can't rely upon the Holy Trinity of, you know, Correa, Springer, Altuve. Guess what? Some of those guys aren't necessarily doing that great this season. So we've had to rely upon other key players. So that's the way I put it. It'd be great to see him back, but let's not count on it. But we've got other guys there. You know, these young players coming up. Wonderful. Wonderful to watch.
Much has been made of Altuve's slump. And it was pointed out by I think Chandler Rome, that this isn't even the worst slump of his career. Like he has gone through, but usually it's the middle of a season. So there's some before or after. Yeah. And of course, I think it's obviously, we both know why it's worse because no one listens. Everyone assumes and he's become the punching bag for the sign stealing. How much of it do you think is that weighing on him? And do you think he swings his way out of it?
The way I look at it is, you know, with Altuve being, you know, my absolute, you know, king, really, to be honest with you, is absolutely my underdog. I'm always going to be biased and I'm always going to say, this guy will turn it around. We all know it. If we look up in our hearts, we know he'll turn it around. It's just, will it be in time? Will it be good enough? But at the end of the day, look at it like this. If he's going to have a slump, let him have it. You know, he's got a lot of pressure, and of course the science thing will have an impact on that. I don't know how much he's on social media. I don't know how much he's online. He probably isn't, and bless up for that. But at the end of the day, I think he'll be, I think it'll be a mixture of things. The media doesn't help. he's just become the scapegoat of the team, and you kind of think, you know what it is? It's jealousy of his talent, composure, and personality, and everyone likes to kick an underdog, and that's what he'll always be. He came from that, and look where he is now. So you can't take that away from him, no matter whether he performs or not, whether people get outraged about him or not. He's always going to be Altuve, and he will come back. He will do. Might not be this season, but he will come back.
How frustrating is it for you? Because, you know, you are a very educated Astros fan. That's just an Astros fan. Look, there's some people among our group that are morons. We have our share of morons and assholes, but you read everything. You know that no one thinks Altuve was the one benefiting trash cans, but people aren't beating on Springer the same way they're beating on Altuve. Why do you think that is?
I really don't know. I think it's an attack upon a man's talent and character. He's so humble. People have this misconception, I think, comes from a lot of rival fans, is that he's arrogant. Sorry, I just don't get that. And I think people just want to attack somebody that is full of incredible talent that came from absolutely nothing. Look where he is. That's enough to make haters and people who are susceptible to jealousy, I believe, to lash out. I think people are just jealous. I think that's all it is.
If you want to tell me Bregman's arrogant, okay, yeah, I absolutely. Correa, probably. Absolutely. But Altuve, Altuve is not that. Neither is Springer. So before we wrap up, you know, you and I talked at the beginning of the pandemic, and you weren't sure whether we felt we should even be playing baseball. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Take that feeling and then take the Cardinals and the Marlins. Mm-hmm. What do you think that should happen to Clevinger with the Indians after what he pulled?
I'm at a loss to that one, really. I mean, I'll be quite honest with you. The only thing I find remotely interesting about that guy is the way that he pulls some sort of Elvis shaking Stevens pitching performance. That's my only thought on him. I have no thoughts towards the guy, really. You know, I really don't have an opinion on that, to be quite honest with you. It's a difficult question because you have to almost like remove the person from the situation, which is quite hard to do with someone like that. I mean, what are your thoughts on it, James?
Well, my thoughts are, and I think I actually share this with you because I can't stand the dude and I can't stand him for his behavior. Mm-hmm. Like, I know the guy a little bit, you know, the story about him like throwing out his girlfriend and infant child. Mm-hmm. So then to have him preach to the Astros about integrity and now to pull this. But I just think, like, you know, if we're going to take this seriously, you can't intentionally and knowingly endanger your team by getting on a plane after hanging out. But that's just me, I guess. You know, so then the last question, Stevie, do you feel like the Astros, you feel good about at least getting into the playoffs and making some noise?
Always. Come on. We're Astros fans. Someone's got to be positive. Come on. We'll do it. We'll get there. We'll get there. We might not make it all the way, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
And that does wrap us up. And the unwritten rule here is I end this with let's get two at the end. And look, unwritten rules are important. Unwritten rules guide our life in so many ways. But the problem with trying to enforce an unwritten rule is that it's not written. And, you know, Major League Baseball wants to carry itself on the mantra of let the kids play and let us be us and all this stuff. The idea that there is so much heat on Fernando Tatis for hitting a home run on a 3-0 pitch is ridiculous. First of all, in modern baseball history, a 7-run lead isn't insurmountable. In fact, I was at a game in which those very Texas Rangers, and look, I get it. It is very clear that there is absolutely no love lost between myself and the Arlington Rangers. I called them the Texas Rangers for the first time on this show. Whew. Yeah, no love lost there. So I, you know, take what I say with a grain of salt, but I was there in whatever they call that, the nice stadium before they moved into the dump, Globe Life, whatever it was. And they definitely got up 10 runs on the Astros. And it was against Garrett. I think Garrett Cole was even pitching. It was like this weird aberration of a start in which the Rangers ended up holding on to win 11-10, because that's the point, is that no lead is out of reach. The idea that you're going to tell a young athlete that you don't swing on 3-0, what if he takes it in strike one? And then maybe he swings and misses on strike two, and then he grounds into a double play, and then the Rangers come back. Then where are we? If you're going to throw Tatis a meatball down the plate, sorry about your luck. And it's not like the Rangers have ever the idea that Mike Minor got his 200 strikeout because they let a pop-up drop. I mean, that seems pretty counterintuitive to the rules of baseball. You know, I know that there are some things that matter. I'm not even against bunting to break up a no-hitter. If you can't field a bunt, then you don't, you know, like, people have compared it to being up in a football game with 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, you're up 14 and you throw a Hail Mary. But it's not that. Tatis is a talented young hitter, one of the best young hitters in the game. And I know we don't go by average anymore, but for this analysis, I think average is more easily communicated to people that aren't really looking at advanced stats. He's hitting 300, which means a 70% chance of the time that he comes up to bat, it's an out. Yeah, he hit a home run. I don't remember it being terribly crushed. It a little bit to the left or right, it's a fly out. So the idea that he intentionally came up there rubbing people's nose to try to rub people's nose in the ass whooping, quite frankly, that San Diego is putting on Arlington is nonsense. And, you know, I think there are bigger fish to fry. I guess I'm just glad that it isn't the Astros getting yelled at on Twitter this morning. That's my thing, because we don't get very many breaks. The Oakland A's had a Nazi salute. We forgot about that real quick. And I guess we're not talking about Clevinger anymore, you know, potentially infecting his whole team. But yeah, so I'm just really glad something else is the topic of conversation. You know, and speaking of the Astros, there was a moment on MLB Network where the studio crew alluded to the buzzers and the buzzers that were disproven on the Chapman home run and the all of those things. Journalism has to have some moment of neutrality. And when you do that, when you make those beats, and it's why I've unsubscribed from The Athletic. It's one thing to report facts. Facts that this show has never denied about the Astros cheating. Just like we haven't denied the evidence of how effective that cheating was, and I've already parsed the difference. But what I don't want to do is read people score points on low-hanging fruit or make jokes for low-hanging fruity jokes from on the stage of MLB Network about things that were disproven just because you're trying to win some points with fans on the East and West Coast of baseball. Because at this point, you know, you're not affecting the 27 guys from the 2017 Astros. You're affecting the fans who, hello, you should still want our business, who are getting, quite frankly, sick and tired of it. And I did unsubscribe from The Athletic, and I was a big proponent of them when they first started. They don't need my money anymore. And it isn't that I'm, again, people that are peeking into this episode for the first time are going to think that I'm somehow butthurt. I promised Don, shout out to Don, that I wouldn't talk about this anymore, and I'm not going to. You can go look at all the exhaustive coverage we've done on the sign-stealing scandal. But if you're a journalist, your job is to report facts. And the more that we've gotten into commentary instead of facts, the farther we've gotten away from the Fourth Estate being able to effectively do its job. I made the comparison a few weeks ago about this is how we get Trump. MLB Network, you work for Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball's report said there were no buzzers and no cheating in 19. So for you to make that illusion as to that's why Altuve hit the home run off Chapman after Harold Reynolds broke down the at-bat, it's irresponsible, and it really makes me question how much I'm going to actually pay attention to that network. And I'm one guy. I'm one guy with a relatively small reach, but my sanity says it's what I need to do. So thanks for watching. I don't really know where that rant came from, but it is what it is. But thanks for watching. We'll have one more episode this week where we will kind of just continue to celebrate 100 episodes. And I want to thank everybody that's listened, everyone that has supported us, you know, people that retweet our shows, even if they're not on the shows, people that are part of a community. We really celebrate independent baseball podcasts and independent baseball media. And it is why we are going to be dedicating a part of our show in the coming weeks to shining a light on those folks. We won't really do it for people who don't, like, it's got to be mutual. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of shows out there that are always asking us for plugs, but never think to plug us. And so, yeah, they can go sit and spin, but we believe in being part of a community, mutually benefiting. I want to thank all the teams, many of them represented on this table, who, you know, opened up their parks to us and gave us the time to come on the show and talk about their brand of baseball and why they're special. The fact that minor league and independent and collegiate summer league baseball exist is what makes baseball awesome, because no other sport has it to that level or that degree. And so I hope that even though I was talking to the hitter and he was talking about he wants to get out to minor league games more, and I hope you do. And when they come back, I hope you support them. So like I said, we'll be back with one more episode this week. I hope you're all enjoying your hump day. And until next time, let's get to you.